Hello, I'm Father Ray Petrucci. Welcome to Thoughts for the Week. We have an important program today, and I'd like to think they're all have some significance. This one truly, truly does, and we'd certainly invite you to stay with us during this half hour. Before we introduce or I introduce my co-host and our guest, I'd like to ask you, our listeners, to please consider contacting us, letting us know your ideas, your thoughts, your responses to the programs, and especially if something you'd like us to research. We're happy to do that for you. If you'd like to contact us, please do so either by sending us a letter, put a stamp on an envelope, and address it to Thoughts for the Week, Post Office Box 7466. That's Post Office Box 7466, Greenwich, Connecticut. The zip code in Greenwich is 06836. Again, that's 06836. On the computer, please email us at clemons10@aol.com. That's C-L-E-M-O-N-S, the number 10, at AOL.com. Please go to our internet magazine, Spirituality for Today. You can find that at spirituality.org. At spirituality.org. Well, oh, also, I neglected this. I don't want to. This program is available on the computer, too, at spirituality.org. And you could hear the archive shows, and perhaps you'll find something of particular interest to you. Well, now it's time for me to introduce first my co-host, Dorothy Riera. Dorothy, welcome.
Thank you, Father. Delighted to be here with our special guest.
Always happy. We have Aaron Neal with us today. Aaron is the Director of Safe Environments for the Diocese of Bridgeport, Connecticut, and she has been the one who founded this particular effort. And, of course, it goes back to the times of the first emergence of an awareness of the sexual abuse of clergy to children. And Aaron, first, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
Aaron, you did come in right at the very basis. You founded this whole thing, and obviously the bishop was interested in having something done. Could you tell us a little bit about the situation you discovered? And I mean how things were dealt with before you and before this awareness took place. And what kind of reality did you find in the diocese when you started?
So when we started this program in 2003, Bishop Lori had already been here and been very much actively involved in creating the Charter for the Protection of Children and Young People. And my office was created a year later, and with that we began with training and background checks as a process across the board. But we had actually had criminal background checks for school employees and fingerprints mm-hmm. that had already been in place for many, many years. So it was well prior to 2003, and even some policies on sexual abuse awareness and prevention. What happened in 2003 was just a very sort of radical change in who was required to go through these processes and who had to have a fingerprint or a criminal background check that may never have been asked before. And those were not just the volunteers and the employees working with kids. We were now including every priest, every teacher, every volunteer, and contractors even people who were not going to be there very long. They were just going to be doing some work on our buildings. Mm. We wanted to make sure they were safe. So that was a huge difference to implement in our diocese.
Now, I'm just wondering how, did you find a lot of resistance to this? I could imagine, like, well, you got to be kidding me. You want me to do this? Or?
Yeah, I mean, there was almost one person at a time. I mean, the conversation mm-hmm. sometimes lasted an hour just to get somebody to get to go to a class. And at the end, when you finally convinced them, so it was really a lot of sales saying, look, this is about protecting kids, and we mm-hmm. care so much about them, we want you to be a part of that. And it's really not because we think anything is concerning about you. You are critical in preventing harm by recognizing signs in others and knowing where to report it. And I think once people understood this was not about them or not trusting them, it was about them protecting kids and being the sort of guardians of children, that sort of changed for most people. Not for everybody, but for most. They would walk out of the class saying, I wish I had this, you know, for my kids when I was younger. Or they would say, where can we, you know, where is this happening again? I want my daughter to go to this. And so we really, it just was a few resistance at a time that you got to a point where people felt this was the right thing to do and it was the right vehicle to do it with.
And to this point, you have created an enormous program. that covers the whole diocese with information and questionnaires. And who trains who?
So we have a core group of about 90 volunteer Virtus facilitators. And we have some priests who are educators. They're trained to bring this information to their parishes and schools. Now, I do a lot of them myself. Deacon John Di Toronto, who is the program assistant, and Astrid Alvarez, who is our Virtus training specialist, they are also doing a tremendous number of trainings. But we have these 90 core volunteers who are really doing this everywhere, and we hold somewhere, I think last year was 237 classes that we held of the Virtus trainings, and in the month of September, when new parents come into our diocese, we hold more classes than there are days of the month. So we sometimes have two or three classes around the diocese in that single day. So it's a lot of opportunities, and we do that to make it as convenient as possible because our volunteers are giving their time, and it can be inconvenient. You know, prevention work is not always convenient, but we want people to know it's worth it, that down the line, their 3 hours or their 4 hours, whatever they have dedicated to this, has long-term effects.
Well, I keep realizing that it talks to everyone who wants to work for the diocese, volunteer, to be involved in the diocese in any capacity. So I guess I'm wondering, what through Virtus or whatever program you're employing, what attitude would you like the person to have in saying, well, actually, I'm going to do something here for the Diocese of Bridgeport. And what does that mean for the way I feel or think about what I'm doing?
Well, I think we certainly want to show our appreciation, and we tell our volunteers how grateful we are for their time coming to this program, because it is a commitment, it is a sacrifice of time. But we also want to convey that, you know, volunteering with children is not something that's an expectation or is an entitlement, it's a privilege. In giving access to kids, and anybody who has any role with children really needs to do that with a very careful mindset. They have to be someone who is safe, has good, healthy boundaries, understands those policies, and knows the reasons behind them, that they're for the best intentions, you know, to keep our kids safe. The mission of our program is really education and awareness, and we hope that every parent who comes to that class and every adult who's coming will take that information and continue to educate others, to bring that to their homes and into their other volunteer work and anywhere else. And we do find people come forward and say, look, I heard you were doing this wonderful program. Can we get our organization to come, you know, through? We have even our photographers that go to our Catholic schools to take photographs. The whole company goes through our Virtus training. So we really find a lot of people, just word of mouth, are finding that this is the right thing to do.
And for some people, undergoing that training is very difficult because either it affects them emotionally enormously, because Aaron, you know, I have taught it, and I have seen people just sometimes it is so emotional for them to hear and to see the CDs of the reality of what has happened that they just can't take it. They just walk out and then they come back, and it surfaces also a lot of emotions in people. Maybe for some reasons in the past, you never know, but it's a very poignant, I think, program.
Yeah,
and for many people.
For many, and absolutely. And you were a wonderful facilitator, and I wish, you know, you wish we could show, you know, on radio, you can't do that. But the videos are so powerful. What our trainers show in these classes are actual testimony from victims of sexual abuse and testimony from actual predators of sexual abuse, those who've been criminally convicted of this. And so they're telling their stories, and the survivors tell their stories. And for those who are deeply impacted in some way, it's a very difficult training to sit through. And so we always give people the out. If they need to walk out and take a break, or if they can't come back, then I'll meet with them and we'll go through the training in a way that's going to be comfortable to them so they have the information. But we don't want them to go through any unnecessary trauma. But most of our survivors have been able to go through the training and feel that this is so important for people who've never had this happen to them, to really understand how sort of manipulative offenders are and how easy it is for them to sort of get into the lives of families and into an environment where they could work with children.
That's why it's such a wonderful program, because these are not actors. These are people from real life who have experience or who have been predators.
Mm. That's right.
Let's say, offer a scenario, let's say a pastor, or let's say if I were the pastor and I contacted you, obviously if you're contacting us, but I'd be saying, you know, I'd like to be able to take a good look at my parish facility, at all the individuals and programs involved. How would I go about determining all these various environments and say, what am I on the lookout for? What's be an unsafe environment?
Okay, so we actually have local safe environment coordinators at our parishes who are trained to do some of the local tracking, because only a parish knows their own volunteers. We only know the volunteers that they share with us. So they are truly at the front line, and when someone wants to sign up for help at the front office or even become part of a parish picnic, it's really up to the parish to be able to let them know that that's wonderful, welcome them, but then also to share a little bit about our safety procedures and our safeguards. And so they're really that front line of defense. And I think, you know, what is challenging with that is that there are often a lot of turnover. So, you know, turnover in parishes is because, you know, people move out of Connecticut and then you have new people coming in and new parents coming into new programs. So it really is a lot of new people every year. So what you think might be everybody's trained and background checked 1 year, and the next year could be a whole new group of people that might need this. But I think a safe environment is the way you identify that is to make sure that everybody has a little bit of information about this, that they can freely communicate it, that the pastor can, you know, bring that to the attention of a new program or a new ministry that wants to form, whether it's an after-school sewing club or an event at the parish that the youth group wants to hold. Maybe they want to go down to Great Adventure or they want to do an event at Steubenville. And those are the things that are so important, these youth events that we have, we want to continue to build. But as we build them, always we have to be thinking about safety as part of that and making sure enough safe adults are part of those programs. And when there isn't enough, when things are sort of thrown together last minute, which sometimes, you know, years ago was just a good idea. Let's all go this weekend to a baseball game, or let's go camping or fishing or skiing. And, you know, we used to just do that. That was part of parish life, right? Nobody thought about making sure everybody's gone through a 3-hour training. And those are things that have changed so much. But I think that's really what we hope will be part of every sort of planning for every event that we do. And it really is. I think that it's very hard to find a parish that doesn't know to put this policy in place before planning a trip or an event.
And as you say, it's so important to have the fathers and mothers inform the parents. Because one of the things that bothers me the most is when we're during Mass and I see children going to the bathroom and the parents don't go with them because they assume. And that is something that really bothers me a lot because I think it's so important that these parents accompany their child to the back of the church. Not because we're in church means you're safe, because it's not the parishioners. You don't know who might be in the back.
That's right. And sometimes I think we get so comfortable with our environments, we forget that, and the parents will let their guards down.
Yes.
And the idea behind our safe environment process is that there's so many adults that have this awareness, like yourself. You noticed it. And there's others who are kind of thinking the same thing. So they're keeping their eyes open. And that makes it very hard for someone who, when the parent lets their guard down or just doesn't have the same high level of concern that another person may have, there'll always be another adult who sees something. And that's the idea of it. You know, about having so many people through this. And I think most parishes have several hundred people through the Virtus training and background check. So it's hard for a predator to get in and go undetected for very long.
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, yes. Mm. But I always check, because if they go to the bathroom, I make sure that they come back. If it passes a long time, I then cringe a little bit.
Yeah, but that's a good thing. That shows exactly what we hope people to gain from this, is that they're going to speak up, they're going to, you know, kind of give their own time limit. Look, I think I need to bring this to mom's attention. And those things make it so, that's exactly what we want, that culture of safety.
Mm. You know, I was wondering, as you were talking about these things of taking kids, my goodness, how I used to do that with the youth group, going different places. And I just thought to myself, oh my gosh, you know, sometimes diocese has some big events. Do you involve like something like World Youth Day?
Yes.
Do you do something to... kind of direct these kids?
So we actually did a training right before the students, before they were going off to World Youth Day, that was just specific to some things that, you know, you can't dial 911 in Poland. You have to dial, you know, another number. And there was a lot of other things that we went through that were specific to World Youth Day. And every situation's different, and you can't always anticipate. So we did a lot of safety planning as part of it. And Bishop Caggiano has been so wonderful about incorporating safe environments into everything we do, so that it's a foundation. It's part of how we build our events, so that we never think that safety could ever be an issue, at least to the best of our ability.
Would you say that every diocese has some program in place at this point?
Yes. I mean, that is, we're audited on this standard annually. So the Stonebridge auditors come, and they actually come and sit down with us and with Bishop Caggiano and all the other entities of the diocese to see if safe environments is, in fact, incorporated. They'll want to talk with a pastor. They'll want to talk with a director of religious ed, and they'll want to speak with principals to get a sense of what it's like to implement safe environments in their school or parish, so the local implementation. And all U.S. dioceses go through that audit and that same process. And so each year, those results are sent out nationally. And that's part of our promise to protect and the bishop's promise to protect. And that's something that we do get a report that goes out annually on.
I was just going to say, and you are open to anybody. It's just not people from the Catholic faith. You are open to anybody that will call you and ask for your help.
That's right. And we do get a lot of calls that are from people who are not even Catholic. They'll just say, look, I understand that the church has a process in place. There's a group. Could I be part of that group? And we certainly welcome anybody who has been a survivor of sexual abuse to come and be part of that. We're very open and welcoming, and we're just so appreciative of their willingness to be with us and join us in our efforts.
Mm-hmm. And they do help you in the core of the teaching of what you're doing?
We do have survivors who have been very active as either a volunteer in the program or as part of our committee. And our committee for healing is actually a group of survivors who have met and meet regularly with myself and the bishop about how to plan for a Mass of Hope and Healing. And we're going to have our next Mass for Hope and Healing on November 18, which will be at St. Francis of Assisi in Weston. And we're excited about that. Our last Mass that was held at St. Anthony's in Fairfield had over 100 in attendance. A lot of survivors from other dioceses and out of state came. So we know that this has been something that has gotten a lot of attention, and we're just so excited about reaching out to others who've been impacted.
We didn't speak too much about survivors. I'm glad you brought that up, Dorothy. How do you do that? How do you do, let's say a survivor, someone approaches you and says, I really need now to bring up what happened to me. I need to talk. What do you give to them? What would you provide?
I think we just first say, how courageous it is, acknowledge how courageous it is for anybody to bring this up to anyone. Mm-hmm. It is one of the most difficult subjects for a person, and so deeply personal that it's, the first thing is just how honored and privileged I am to be able to be that person that they're willing to share that with. Mm-hmm. So acknowledge how hard that is, and to apologize deeply if it had anything to do with the church, that there is, no place for abuse in the Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. We're completely against that. And so they understand very quickly that there is, there's certainly no place for it, that they have a home with us, that there are certainly resources that we could offer to them, and I would offer them counseling and help to get counseling if they have not already had that, if they wish to be part of our group. Sometimes they just wish to talk, and sometimes it'll be a conversation that lasts an hour or two on the phone, and they're usually very grateful. Sometimes they don't want to give their whole name. They just want to say, hi, my name is Sue, and I just need someone to talk to, and then and I do explain to them that if they do have an incident, I am required to report what they share with me to civil authorities, so that, there's confidentiality and then there's limits to it. Mm-hmm. Because if that person is still alive who did the harm to them, they could still be alive harming someone else. So we certainly let them know that. It's always a challenge because you never want someone to come in to you and then have to tell them that you're going to have to call the police about the incident. Mm-hmm. But, they understand after a period of time that, they're making a choice about how much they decide to share. And we hope that they'll be willing to do it together, that we could make that call at the same time.
What have you learned about the character traits of an abuser?
So the person who offends, the predator can be really a wide range of personalities and certainly a wide scope in terms of age. We know of 8-year-olds who sexually abused even smaller children. We know of 88-year-olds who sexually abused. So there's no age to this. Mm-hmm. Women abuse, men abuse. What you can't tell is by looking at someone if they're safe to be with children. And I think that's a dramatic change from when I was a child, when my mother or father would say, don't get in a car with a stranger. Mm-hmm. So my concept of safety was about how familiar I was with the person. But the reality is these are individuals who are known and trusted. And one of the things that you start to see about a person is really the behaviors. So we talk about warning signs and behaviors, not about other things that you might see in a person. So an adult who tends to break the rules, doesn't, you know, and let mom or dad know where they're taking the kid, always wants to be alone with children, tries to discourage adults from being present or participating, wanting to be alone, you know, wrestling, tickling, overboard, lots of hugs. They might even try to give a kid a cell phone and say, look, keep this our secret. This will be our way to communicate. Oftentimes they try to get kids to engage in illegal substances or other activities so that the kid feels they've done something wrong. So they start to, you know, groom the child by making them feel responsible. So there's a lot of those early behaviors that tell us something is just not right.
What do we, someone who is engaged in this, do you know the percentage of those perhaps have been abused themselves when they were young?
So the number is, it varies depending on which studies, but it is a high number of those who have been, who have abused, who have had some type of abuse in their past. It doesn't necessarily mean sexual abuse, but it is, you know, upwards of 50-60% of some type of history of trauma in their own lives that they may go on to abuse. But as we know, many survivors of abuse have done the complete opposite and have just worked very, very hard and tirelessly to prevent it or to ensure that, you know, what happens, you know, it never happens again to any other child. So, you know, there's really no way to determine that based upon a person's history. But we do know that if a child has been abused, the earliest intervention possible makes it less likely that the damaging consequences long-term will carry with them for the rest of their life. The scars of it will always last, but getting help sooner than later is really the goal in treatment.
What involvement do you have with state or federal agencies?
So we have a lot of communication with the Connecticut Department of Children and Family Services in the state. We, you know, have in-services on mandatory reporting that we've had in our schools, in our parish, and even at the Catholic Center over the years. And now we have an online program that we actually have linked directly to our website. So under this safe environment section of our diocesan website, you can go right to the State of Connecticut mandatory reporting training that's online. Anybody can do it. We ask all of our educators to do that as part of their online continuing education. And we also have had communications and work with the Center for Family Justice in Bridgeport, a lot of the Connecticut Sexual Assault Crisis Centers, just as a resource for those who may not be ready to come to a group with the church. And sometimes we see that they've started there and then they come over to us when they're ready.
How would a person learn just generally more about your program or more about the programs available? Because I can imagine that for people who have a, let's say, a first time of either an awareness of someone they know or maybe worries about themselves, I'm just wondering about to whom would they reach?
They can always call me. That is our number is there for anyone who just has questions about this, has interest in learning a little bit more about it, or if they have something that they need to share and don't know where else to go. And, you know, I do have on my desk a list of all the Connecticut hotlines, but also the care line in every state in the United States. So if you had an incident even in another state, we can give that information to the caller. So, you know, we tried to be a resource, and they can also call the 1-800-CARELINE number at the Connecticut Department of Children and Family.
And, you know, it's incredible now today how the students themselves are becoming more aware and are willing to tell of things happening. For example, with the gun violence, kids knowing somebody brought a gun to school, letting the authorities know, letting the principal know. All this is so important because they have to help themselves. I think children need to be made aware that they need to help themselves by sharing if they know something is going to happen or something, other student is bringing things that are not appropriate for school. And it's a dangerous environment that we live in a dangerous world, but I think more awareness helps that situation.
Absolutely, and we do let kids know that it's the right thing to do. Yeah. They won't get into any trouble for reporting, that it's so important for the safety of their peers as well.
Is that one of the major stumbling blocks, perhaps, people worried about getting involved, as we've heard over the past number of years. Just don't want to get involved in it.
Even people are afraid, yes, they don't want to be involved, but they're also afraid that they might get into trouble or might be sued if they come forward about an allegation that they just don't have proof about. And I think that's the biggest stumbling block is we don't have proof. We rarely walk into a situation where we witness abuse. But we can hear about it through a child's disclosure or an email or a conversation with a parent, and someone says, I think something might be going on. That is enough of a standard to report it to DCF. And they will, you know, have to decide if it's enough to investigate. Mm-hmm. But it's always best to report what you know when you know it than it is to wait and then feel terrible if down the line it did turn out to be something that was serious and you had a chance to have protected a child earlier. Mm-hmm. So it's so important to report what you know.
Are there any other challenges that you see, let's say, within just dealing with it, you're trying to promote your situation, fulfill your mission?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very sensitive subject, right? Mm-hmm. And a lot of people don't want to talk about this. And it's for many people who are from different generations, this was never talked about. Mm-hmm. It would never be talked about on the radio. It certainly wouldn't be talked about in a public way. So there's still sort of a lot of people who come saying, I don't know why I'm here, or they don't understand where their role is with this, or just uncomfortable in general. So it's starting to get people more comfortable talking about subjects that are important that they may not be comfortable with. So it's really, that's one of the biggest challenges. And even in parishes, this becomes such a big challenge to get all volunteers that, you know, it's something that is, while people know it's the right thing to do, it's not always an exciting thing to have to do, right? People, it's one more thing that sort of puts on the plate of people who are already doing way too much.
Yeah. I'm just wondering also, you know, when you take a look at, let's say, the work you need to do with each day, what would you see now for 15 years, correct? When you hang up the cleats and you walk away, what would you like to see as far as your office and just a general environment?
Well, my hope is that this will continue, that someone will continue this effort, or, you know, parishes and schools will continue to develop what they have started. And it really is just about being vigilant and making sure that there's always, as new information comes, with regards to child safety, and it changes very, very quickly. 10 years ago, safety is very different than 20 years ago, or even today. Mm. So just to being updated on what is new and current and what can help keep our kids safe.
Now, and that brings me, as you mentioned, development. Things like technologies, do you foresee almost a safe environment effort in trying to understand and how to implement and what to be aware of? And just in technology.
Yeah, I mean, this whole revision of our latest policies and procedures has a whole section dedicated to electronic communication with minors. So we used to have to worry about just now having two adults present.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now we have to worry about when we send out a youth group communication or a soccer schedule, how do we do that safely and transparently so that we have that rule of two on the internet with kids, as well as through apps and others that are as safe as possible. We're always exploring new ways to do that.
Wow. Well, we've been speaking with Erin Neal, who is the Director of the Office of Safe Environments for the Diocese of Bridgeport. We thank you for being with us.
Thank you so much.
And I hope you, our listeners, have picked up some very valuable tips and also some answers to what to do. So thank you for being on the program, Erin. And Dorothy, thank you for being
here.
And to our listeners, thank you. Join us again next week.